From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
As much as I love this job and will always love this city and its residents, I've decided not to seek re-election. This has been the job of a lifetime, but it is not a job for a lifetime.
The news came as a surprise yesterday, considering campaign staffers were hired and more than $8 million was raised.
But it didn't take long for his mayoral challengers to chime in.
Emanuel, running or not running, doesn't change the fact that this city has serious problems. You know, we have a murder rate that exceeds LA and New York combined.
This union takes credit for this mayor's departure, not by ourselves, but on behalf of every parent that stood by us when we said you couldn't close 50 schools.
Having somebody new in there and somebody hopefully that sees the police point of view will be a benefit to our members.
I just heard about that this morning. I look forward to working with whoever is the next mayor.
Is there a possibility you might run for mayor?
Look, I'm fully focused on the next 62 days. I have an election, I'm running for controller. We've done some great things and there's a lot more stuff that we're still working on and 62 more days of full focus.
Chicago Mayor Rahm Emanuel is not seeking re-election and the long list of people lining up to succeed him is about to get even longer. We'll talk about the mayor's tenure, his decision to call it quits, and how that could affect state politics in the year ahead. This is State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. Sean Crawford is away. With me in the Illinois Public Radio State House Bureau is IPR reporter Daisy Contreras. Joining us, as always, from the studio of NPR Illinois on the campus of the University of Illinois Springfield is Charlie Wheeler. He's director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at UIS and a longtime State House reporter and observer. On the line is Amanda Vinicky, correspondent for Chicago Tonight on the PBS station WTTW. And from City Hall in Chicago, it's A.D. Quigg. She reports for the Daily Line. A.D., Amanda, welcome to State Week.
Thanks for having me.
Same here.
All right. So, A.D., I'd like to begin with you because you are in City Hall. You spend a lot of time there. Take us back to Tuesday morning. How do you get word? What is this like?
So Tuesday morning, we're all, you know, fresh off of vacation, kind of catching up on all our emails, and everyone gets this email saying, you guys got to come up for a press conference at 10:45. Our managing editor, Heather Sharon, went up there. We were all taking guesses about what it could be, but on the elevator, some people were saying, all right, he's either announcing officially that he is running because he hadn't made that announcement yet, or he's out. I was actually still staying in the City Hall press room just kind of monitoring Twitter, and I see it come through, and my jaw drops to the floor. It was a complete surprise to me. As you said in the intro, Rahm was raising money. He was putting polls out there. He was staffing up. There were PACs started to support this run, and all of a sudden he announces that he's out, says it was a job of a lifetime, not for a lifetime, that he wants to spend a little bit more time with his family. He and his wife Amy are empty nesters, and he says he's going to try to fit as much as he can in the next 8 months.
So, Amanda, were you also surprised by this?
I mean, there had been some speculation, particularly after a Chicago Sun-Times article raised that it was basically make it or break it time for the mayor. That said, yes, I was surprised. I actually was at the farmer's market that's right across the street from my place on Sunday morning. And it is now time that mayoral candidates can begin to collect petition signatures. And the only folks that I saw out there were gathering petition signatures for Rahm Emanuel. And then lo and behold, this news came down, just making clear there. I mean, there was really like 45 minutes notice between the point that the mayor's team sent what was an email that merely said the mayor will make an announcement and this bombshell. So while there had been some feeling, is he going to do it? Is he not? It's just one of those where to imagine a mayor who is known and is literally, you know, the model for TV characters for being such a fighter to drop out when, though polling didn't look great for him, he certainly had a very good chance at winning another term. Again, people may debate that. People would say they were for sure going to go to a runoff, and even then he would have a tough time catching a third term. He's still the mayor, and he still had a whole lot of money in the bank, and there is no clear alternative. So, yeah, I think people were stunned. You had one alderman call it a meteor, or he also described it as an earthquake, and everyone is still assessing the damage.
Well, AD, what do we know about why he made? I mean, what did he say that morning? Other than, you know, this is the job of a lifetime, spend more time with the family, yada yada. I mean, we're used to hearing that from politicians. Do we know anything else about why he is stepping back at this time, AD?
Well, he did not take any questions at that press conference, kind of leaving everyone to speculate about why he was leaving. In the few interviews he's done this week, he hasn't really gone on about why he's leaving, but, you know, the chatter is, like Amanda said, the polling wasn't that great. We also had the start of the Laquan McDonald trial of Jason Van Dyke beginning this week, which was just going to bring more and more attention on, you know, this police shooting and alleged cover-up of the video of the shooting where this young black teenager was being shot 16 times and kind of drawing attention to the problems in the police department. He kind of poo-pooed that a little bit, but he has not really expressed why he's leaving, but he has said he does not think that his successor is in the current field that we have now of 12 candidates, which is really interesting.
And, yeah, you know, I'll add there just briefly before we go on. I'm sure we want to talk about this long and growing field, but I have no insight whatsoever. I will add that he got very choked up when making the announcement and has in subsequent interviews as well, particularly when speaking about his family. And his wife, Amy Rule, was standing by the mayor's side when he made the announcement about not running for re-election. And at one point, she grabbed his hand and really, they wrapped arms at the podium. Some videos you can see it, in others you can't. It was, in a sense, a subtle gesture, and yet, at the same time, a very powerful one. And he said, people always want to say it's more time with family, but the mayor did talk about how he had just returned from, for example, the funeral for Senator John McCain. I talked to somebody who said they couldn't imagine Amy Rule looking happier than if she'd won the lottery. I mean, the mayor had gone through people protesting outside his home. It has certainly been a rough 8 years. So it may be that, yeah, he didn't want to lose. He's never lost an election before and didn't want to go out on a sour note. It could be there's, you know, some speculation that you hear out there that this could be a launch. Obviously, he has had a role in national politics previously, and while we are focused on the gubernatorial and mayoral elections, certainly looking ahead to 2020, could this be, step out now and then launch pad going forward for something having to do with the next presidential cycle? I mean, we really, really don't know, and he hasn't given an answer, but I think everybody's gut kind of says different things, and those are all things to keep in mind.
Yeah, and I think AD mentioned the Laquan McDonald video,
oh,
and of course the trial of Jason Van Dyke getting underway this week. I mean, that's something that was, I guess he still claims that he didn't see it, but it was viewed as problematic enough that was kind of kept from the public until after the last election. And there were protests that have erupted. It was one of the big contributing factors to the national Black Lives Matter movement. I don't think that, I don't want to just gloss over that too much. I think that that's something that, are people talking about that as being a potential big factor here?
Certainly, you have a lot of activists on part of that Black Lives Matter or related organizations, CTU as well, so not related to Laquan McDonald, but I think you have a lot of activists that are taking credit for this. I mean, not only celebrating that he is not going to be running for a third term, but again, really taking credit for it and saying that we chased him out of there. It was our activism that did that. This trial, we don't know how long it will go on. It did get underway this week, but not even really. I mean, it was just the very beginning of jury selection. And I went out, there was a protest on that first day. And the folks that I talked to said, you know, we're not talking about violence per se, but if Van Dyke is acquitted, it will be a slap in the face, particularly to Chicago residents of color. And they vowed to try and rally and bring down the city like Chicago has never seen. So that is a great big unknown, not just, I think, for Rahm Emanuel's political future, but in general for the future of this city at this point in time.
Yes, and the thing that I keep returning to is that I don't see a good outcome for Rahm Emanuel either way that this trial comes out. If Jason Van Dyke is acquitted, you're going to have a lot of activists upset. There's a lot of worry about rioting. But also, if Jason Van Dyke is acquitted...
if he's convicted, yeah.
Yeah, I think the damage done between Rahm Emanuel and police officers, the loss of popularity he's had among police officers isn't going to be fixed either.
Yeah, and that's certainly something else that people have talked about as being a factor. As we've seen the crime rate come up, and after that video, he was talking about officers, quote, going fetal, I think. Charlie, I want to ask you, when I was putting together the clips for the beginning of the show, you know, I usually try to find a balance, and I got to say, I could not find audio or video clips of this week of people saying, you know, how great Rahm Emanuel did. I mean, we did get some statements in our inboxes, text statements from other politicians, Speaker Madigan, Senate President John Cullerton, you know, praising his dedication to
President
the city.
President Bill Clinton and Obama actually weighed in with praise.
But not a lot of people in Chicago who dealt with him on a day-to-day basis, you know, the union heads, the head of the police union, the head of the teachers union. Charlie, I mean, how is this the way Chicago mayors typically go out? Under a hail of criticism?
I'm not sure that we've had enough mayors go out one way or the other.
Well, that's a fair point.
Yeah, if you look back at it, in the case of the first Mayor Daley, I'm going back to my early days as a reporter, he passed away in office. There was an interregnum. Blahnik was beaten in a primary by Jane Byrne, for the office, because of difficulties in getting snow plowed. Harold Washington was elected and died in office. Rich Daley ultimately became mayor, and he served, 22 years? And now Rahm is bowing out after just 8. I think his record will be looked at as being kind of a mixed bag. If you look at the area of economic development, of building up the loop, the downtown area, the near west side, bringing in national companies, high-tech companies, Rahm did very well. And he's cemented Chicago's position as a world-class city. If you look out in the neighborhoods, not so well, particularly on the west side and the south side, where there are large numbers of folks of color living. The closing of the schools in the neighborhoods, that upset a lot of people. You could argue, well, there's not enough kids going, so we're going to shut down the school. But if you're living there, and this is your neighborhood school, and it's being closed, that's going to upset people. The fact that he decided to confront the pension system, the underfunding, and push through the city council a number of property tax increases to deal with that, that didn't make people happy. Plus, there's another big bump coming up in their next budget where they have to dedicate something like $200 million more towards the pension liability. So he's done some good things, but on the other hand, he has not been able to solve the problem of how do we bring the economic development into the low-income neighborhoods? How do we provide opportunities for youth, particularly youth of color, that would give them some hope in their life so that they're not as easily lured into kind of a gang life? So when the final chapter is written, you know, how many decades down the road, I think it will be, as I say, it'll be a mixed review on Emanuel. High grades in some areas, low grades in others.
Yeah, and I noticed particularly this week the Chicago Tribune columnist Eric Zorn, who also said he saw a mixed bag from the tenure, and he said that he thought that Emanuel inherited a steaming mess from Mayor Richard M. Daley, who, quote, whose toes are probably still sore from vigorously kicking so many cans down the road. And, I mean, that's something Chicago, as well as state government, has been doing for a long time. When Emanuel came in, he was looked at as sort of the establishment candidate, the guy, you know, the LaSalle Street candidate, which is Chicago's equivalent of Wall Street. Daisy, I want to ask you, he was good friends or said to be reasonable, had a reasonably good working relationship with Governor Rauner. How did that work out?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, Rahm Emanuel, when he went into office 8 years ago, he really thought he had Bruce Rauner's support all the way. And that actually changed over the last few years, especially it was more apparent over the last months. Bruce Rauner has been very critical of how Emanuel has handled one thing, violence in Chicago. Amanda, you were probably there when protesters tried to take and close down several highways in Chicago to protest the violence in the city. And Bruce Rauner took to Twitter and criticized Rahm Emanuel, telling him, you have to get it together. And there was this kind of like infighting between them. And yeah, they were friends at some point, taking vacations together, drinking expensive wine. So I don't think it really turned out how Emanuel really thought it would at the end.
Yeah. All right, so I want to get to the field of candidates in a moment, but first I just want to wrap up this discussion of Emanuel by, I was trying to think this week, sort of in a big picture way, what does he stand for as a politician? I mean, we talk about House Speaker Michael Madigan, you know, not really being an ideologue. He's about holding on to his power. Governor Rauner, I think we've seen, is more of an ideologue, and he believes in smaller government and weakening Democrats in order to get there, you know, particularly by dismantling public employee unions. I mean, I'll throw it out there. I don't know, AD, Amanda, or Charlie, do you want to take a stab at what does Rahm Emanuel stand for as a politician?
I think, I mean, it's still as yet unwritten. As he said, he's fairly young. He's, I believe, 60 years old. And we don't know yet what his future path will be, so that it's not a finished legacy. I think he would term it as, and it's a lot of what Charlie listed, his victories in terms of, you know, school. Really, I think he would say it's taking on tough challenges. His critics would say that his legacy is not perhaps creating, but exacerbating a, quote, tale of two cities.
Yeah, my first thought was he likes winning. He, in interviews this week, he said, you know, never lost a vote at city council, never ran an election and lost. He has been known for being a strategist, and that's the thing that I'll always remember him for, is being a strategist and figuring out ways to win on everything, even at the expense of maybe, as Charlie said, these South and West Side neighborhoods that have been struggling during his tenure.
And I would say I wouldn't give him too much credit for not losing a vote in the city council, because I'm guessing if you go back 40 or 50 years, you could count on one hand the number of times that the city council has actually voted against the mayor.
Exactly.
Excluding the period when Harold Washington was mayor and the white ethnics under Edward Doliak tried to block him at every turn, including legislation down here to strip powers from the mayor and give it to the city council, which, interestingly enough, Mike Madigan tubed and would not let it see the light of day.
Yeah. You know, it strikes me that, just to wrap this up, that I think Amanda mentioned that, you know, earlier he's a model for TV characters, you know, the sort of tough, hard charging him. Famously, he's, you know, lost a finger in a high school job slicing deli meat, I think, if I have that right. I mean, it's interesting to me that he is the type of person, he spent much of his career as the sort of Machiavelli behind the scenes. You know, the tough character in those shows is often the chief of staff, not the politician themselves. And when he stepped out on the stage as mayor, he had to learn to modulate that personality. And, you know, perhaps some of the challenges and successes of his administration speak to whether he was successful in that. All right, AD, I want to turn to the field of challengers. And I should say, you're listening to State Week. I'm Brian Mackey. With me on the panel this week are Daisy Contreras, Charlie Wheeler, Amanda Vinicky of WTTW, and AD Quigg of The Daily Line. AD, long list of people who are lining up to be next. And we already had a long list before this week started, right?
Right. So we've got 14 that have officially filed paperwork, but, you know, there are 20 names at least still floating out there as potential contenders. So kind of the top tier that people keep mentioning over and over are Paul Vallis, Gary McCarthy, and Lori Lightfoot. Those are the top three. But, you know, we're hearing a lot of rumors about Toni Preckwinkle already having, she's the president of the Cook County Board, the head of the Cook County Democratic Party, already printing petitions and perhaps planning on an announcement on Monday. A ton of other names floating out there, Congressman Mike Quigley, Arnie Duncan, Valerie Jarrett, just on and on and on. And I don't think we're really going to know what this race is going to look like for the next few weeks until we actually know who's in.
Yeah, and Amanda, Comptroller Susana Mendoza was kind of put on the spot this week. I'm sure as she expected, she had rehearsed an answer or had an answer prepared at least. Yeah, she was giving a speech at the City Club in Chicago.
Either a perfectly timed or a poorly timed speech, depending on how you look at it. I mean, she certainly had the platform, and it was easy for reporters to ask her all the questions. And as somebody who has covered Mendoza for quite some time, I'm sure she appreciated it and loved it, and yet had to give what is really a non-answer of, I'm focused on the current race. But she certainly is somebody. I mean, I think here's the thing. You're getting all of these names because, as Charlie alluded to earlier, when/ever do you have an opening like this? I mean, as I think has probably become clear throughout this conversation, this isn't just, you know, the mayor is the end-all be-all. I mean, it's not a governor who has to work with legislative branches in the same sort of regard. I mean, there is so much power in that position. And I think you have a lot of politicians who now see this as their big opening. They're one shot, and how do you not take it? Because it could be, at this point anyway, anyone's race. You've got to get your petitions in by the end of November, and then it's a February race. There's pretty much no way that this isn't going to go to a runoff, which would take place in early April. And so when you have such a vast field, I think anybody with name recognition is saying, hey, this could be my one shot. And you hear that Hamilton lyric going over and over. It's your one shot, and you're not going to mess it up. So that's really where we're, I think AD said it earlier, the mayor said he doesn't believe that the winner ultimately has yet entered the race, but we don't know when we will see a final count. And, I mean, to me, no matter what, you will certainly see presumably some of the people that are in the race now not make it onto the ballot, be it because of petition challenges, or they won't have the money, or they'll see the writing on the wall and for their own political future they'll step aside, what have you. But no matter what, this is going to be very difficult for me as a journalist. It's going to be very difficult to cover. I think it's going to be hard for voters to get a true sense of any candidate's platform and who in fact they are until it gets presumably to that runoff point of view. And that's where, yeah, name recognition and money are always big factors, but by golly, that's going to be even more so than ever.
Yeah, and adding to what Amanda just said, this opens the possibility for other high-profile Latinos to join the race as well, other than Susana Mendoza. We have Congressman Luis Gutierrez and Attorney Jerry Chico. And back in 2015, Ram was forced into a runoff by Jesus Chuy Garcia, a Democrat who had served as the Cook County Commissioner on the Southwest side for the past 7 years. And he was also previously a state senator. Garcia was actually prepping for the 2019 race when another high-profile Latino, Luis Gutierrez, who has served 12 terms in Congress, announced he would not be running for re-election and he would instead be returning home to Puerto Rico. But now we have, of course, after Rahm Emanuel steps down, he says Gutierrez is now considering to postpone his return to Puerto Rico and possibly give the race a chance. So yeah, like Amanda said, it's about name recognition, and a lot of people are changing their plans to have a go at this.
Yeah, and I mean, Chicago has had just one African-American mayor in its history. I don't think it's ever had a Latino mayor in its history, but certainly that is a growing voting block in the city. Charlie, you were trying to get in there as well.
Well, this is, I guess, a question for the folks in Chicago and something that I find fascinating. There has been in the city council kind of a growing progressive block, and I wonder, with the aldermanic elections coming up, will they be able to expand their numbers enough to be a counterweight to whomever the mayor turns out to be?
Yeah, I've wondered the same thing. We've got, this empowered progressive caucus, but also with the mayor not around, there are a few 100 percenters or people that vote with him all the time that are kind of weighing whether they step down because they don't know what new alliances there will be when this new city council takes place and when the new mayor takes place. The mayor has said he is going to use some of that $8 million war chest to defend his allies, but I'm not sure how far that will go given this new kind of progressive wave that might be coming in the midterms and that might extend to 2019.
All right. Well, we have 5 months and 19 days from today until the consolidated primary election. As well, we also have a general election coming up in there. But I want to turn briefly at the as we're nearing the end of the show to State House news. State Representative Lou Lang was Amanda Vinicky. He this week was cleared of harassment charges.
That he was. It was a strange day, actually, looking back to May 31st, when typically State House reporters are focused on the budget. And in all years, you finally had an end to that monster impasse. And yet there had been rumors that a top legislator would be brought down. That turned out to be Mary Ann Lungcar making allegations that then Deputy Majority Leader Lou Lang had touched her, inappropriately touched her back. There also, she had an allegation that had something to do with really a monstrous, like, hundreds of millions of dollar bribe that she alleged Lang was in the room and had been offered. Lungcar, by the way, was an advocate for medical marijuana. Mm-hmm. This week, we did see the Legislative Inspector General, interim still, Julie Porter, come out with a report that cleared Lang of those allegations. There are still those that are skeptical because Lungcar didn't participate in the investigation, saying that she did not trust anybody, any inspector general who'd been appointed by legislative leaders. Others would look at that and say, well, that proves even more that there was no there. What we still don't know at this point in time is whether Lang will be once again resume his top leadership posts or what, but he is very much expected to return to the Illinois House and is tops in seniority, has a whole lot of power no matter what, but he has.
Yeah, he used to be the number three Democrat there. So that I'm afraid is all the time we have. We're going to turn now to notes from the field, just about 10, 15 seconds each. AD Quigg.
So mine is Chicago Party Aunt, who is a personality on Twitter and who announced somewhat facetiously that she's running for mayor. I am looking forward to some snark in this race on Twitter. Last time around, we had at Rahm Emanuel and his sidekick, Quaxelrod. I'm hoping we get a similar kind of successor.
Daisy Contreras.
Yes, Congressman Luis Gutierrez, who we've talked about earlier today in the show, called on President Donald Trump to resign Wednesday in a speech on the floor of the U.S. House of Representatives. And interestingly, the speech came a day after Mayor Rahm Emanuel announced he would not be seeking re-election.
And I'm going to take the host's prerogative to do the final note from the field today. It involves a case I've been covering literally my entire career as a professional reporter. It has to do with State Farm. They agreed to settle a federal racketeering case for $250 million. They're not admitting wrongdoing, but the case originally had to do with the allegations that they tried to rig the Illinois court system by getting now Chief Justice Lloyd Carmier onto the Illinois Supreme Court in order so that he would vote to wipe out a $1 billion jury verdict almost 20 years ago. Carmier has denied that he was any part of this, but he may have had to actually testify in this trial. This settlement keeps that from happening. That's our time for this edition of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler, Daisy Contreras, Amanda Vinicky of Chicago Tonight and WTTW, and A.D. Quigg of The Daily Line. Production assistance for today's program was provided by Bob Meyer. I'm Brian Mackey.
You've been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capital by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.